Rudy called this work for a lot of reasons, rather than meditation. And he had an enormous investment in working, more than I ever understood, because I didn't come from a family of workers, and I was, of all the people, the least active as a worker. And Rudy saw that in me and put me to work early on. And as you may not recall, he renovated a number of buildings, and all of us were pressed into service. And it was great for me and for Blanche, and we loved it. And the only time I ever saw Rudy get angry was when a friend of mine who was a student at the time was up at Big Indian, and Rudy had a work day. And this friend went off and wandered in the woods, and Rudy was aware of that. And he got really pissed and said, "This is not the way you have a spiritual life. It's not the way you have a real life." And I'd never seen Rudy get angry like that. And when I put out as for the people here an invitation to come help work on the house, and I kind of knew it would be a low turnout. And I'm not angry. I'm really not. But I'm sad by that, because people don't understand the value of effort and work. More than that, don't understand how essential it is in the world we live in every way. It doesn't happen by dreaming, wishing, hoping, waiting for it to unfold. There is a interaction, like a dance partner. Either you are part of the dance or you're not. And if you don't do anything, you want just to be moved around like a rag doll, you know, that's fine. Your life will be not dissimilar to that of a rag doll. But if you want to be a partner in this manifestation that we all exist in, work is essential. It's really essential. And the gift of an opportunity to work has to be grasped as a gift, not as a commandment, not as a drag, but as something of an opportunity. And I don't want to talk about this too much just because it doesn't need to, you know, be out there. People who are here, and people who are not listening are not listening, and it's all fine in the end. But I do want you all to know that a call to work, whether it's from a person being a better teacher or a parent or a friend or whatever it is an opportunity. It's an opportunity. It's not something to be in the hope. You can give yourself over to being a helper. Being a helper in this world is almost as good as it gets. So we put that out into the atmosphere. This is now an opportunity to work. This class is an opportunity to do the work. What is the work? It's to find a place of working with the muscle system of spiritual growth. And I remind you, Rudy said, the muscle of spiritual growth is not this, it's this. It's a letting go, not a clutch. It's not holding, it's freeing. And you have to remember the work of this moment, sitting here in this class, is allow yourself to let go. Open as deeply as possible and let, and this is something to be discovered, something higher, greater, deeper, more extraordinary even than you, to arrive inside and knock on the door and wake you up to who and what you are. That's what we're doing. It's not magical, particularly, although it can be. It's simple. It's the work of spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening is to wake up to the enormity of the possibility of what it means to be human. That's what we're here for. Every one of us is here for that opportunity. And if you give yourself over to it, there's a gift involved. And the gift is the gift of your own life. And if you don't do it, it's an unwrapped gift that sits somewhere in a corner forgotten. You know, it's sort of sad. I mean, maybe, you know, kids would find a gift in the closet after, you know, 5 months after Christmas and get excited. Oh my God, there's one more gift. But the reality is, this is the time to open the gift. So sit quietly, be available to the enormous flow that wants to come through to you. And as I exercise my muscle of getting out of the way, it arrives from here. It also arrives from you. And there's a meeting of these extraordinary energies that profoundly love one another. And that's what's waiting. And I'll meet you in the middle.
Bruce, I just wanted to mention that the audio quality is not so good, and it might be because Blanche's computer is not muted. I don't know, but the audio is not good. So
is your computer not muted? Is your computer muted downstairs?
It doesn't seem to be.
You're saying it doesn't seem to be muted. And I will also make this a little louder. Is that helping at all? That does help. Daniel, is that helping with you?
Yeah, that's a bit better.
Okay. It's a long preamble to starting with the class, but actually, you know, Rudy used to, he would give a half hour talk before the class. And then he would also take his shirt off. I don't do that. And he would then ask for questions at the end, which seemed to go on for quite a long time. I have a different approach, but, you know, I guess when Rudy talked at the beginning, we just kind of got quieter and quieter and quieter. And then when he started teaching, we were already there, which is kind of a gift in a way. I kind of asked you to come in and do that part on your own, but it's worth doing. We're complete. And Blanche's computer hopefully will be on mute. You know, I suspect she's downstairs trying to figure out how do I mute this.
Louis' pictures were with his shirt. So, and obviously there was a reason. What was that?
Well, my guess is nothing hidden. That's how I would look at it. Most teachers don't do that. And I certainly wouldn't want to put that on you guys. And Rudy at some point stopped doing that. He started to become, you know, orange-based. And I don't know that I understand what the transition was, but it had to do with when he became a Swami. But his absolute non-Swami predecessor being was in a way naked to the world, and would have been completely. And he was fearless in that. And what he was offering was his complete self, which you could reject if you wanted. Because, you know, he was a big belly, you know, and he had literally big tits. And he would say, draw from all of this. And it was kind of an extraordinary thing. He would just say, take this all on. And those of us who wanted that came in and probably would have disrobed as well if we had been asked to. We were so open to his naked love. It was really remarkable. And you know, I've never seen anything like it elsewhere. It's why 50 some years later, I'm still sitting here trying to live up to some of what I was given in that. Well, Nityananda too, yeah. That's great true. Yeah, Nityananda often was disrobed. You know, he walked around a little bit. And of course it was India and it was hot. But it was also, he didn't care. His body was like the least interesting thing to him. You know, that's my imagination. And I know when I visited his his samadhi shrine, or his room, basically. Nityananda slept on a slab of concrete. You know, it may have been a little carpet on it, but it was not a mattress. He just didn't care. And as far as I could tell, had horrible arthritis and walked like he did. And the great lesson for all of us at this point in time really is, how do we begin to approach that kind of detachment? Not disassociation, because that's a different idea. Detachment means it's there, it's present, and you go, oh yeah. And that's very important. Okay, guys, get into this. I really love you. The goal here is get out of your way. I'll get out of my way. And this is an odd subject to talk about. But it may seem relevant and it may seem irrelevant depending upon your current state of mind. But I want to talk about what it means to be terminal. To have a terminal illness. What it means to discover that your time on earth is limited, and that the journey forward, while predictable in its outcome, is not predictable in terms of the journey, but you're pretty sure it will not be fun. Every one of us will arrive at terminality differently, and yet every one of us is already there. We're already kind of approaching, I guess the word is end game. And there is an individual response to that finality that is unique to every one of us. We do not necessarily share it with anybody else, and we do not necessarily even know how we will react to that information until it's in front of us. And most of us want to keep pushing it off further and further, but now that my friends and I are moving toward, you know, the last phases of life, you know, approaching our 80s or entering our 80s, it's a living reality. And it is amplified by this very difficult fact that the world itself could be facing terminality, finality, beyond our capacity to engage that. Most everybody looking elsewhere, people who are looking at it, are having a problem, and according to the New York Times, according to my therapist, others who I've spoken to, most of my therapist patients, and according to the New York Times, most therapists in general's patients are all expressing extraordinary fear of the end of times, or the end of their times. And all of you who know me, haven't seen any of my movies, are all about death and finality on some level. A little bit on the hopeful side. But I have to say, my biology, my psychology, my physiology resonates with the, I'll call it the sadness of finality, and the extraordinary, unbelievable preciousness of everything I see around me at this point, because I live with its finality. And in a way, there's something beautiful about that. I treasure each of you, space here, beyond your understanding, I have such overwhelming gratitude for things like waking up in the morning, weather patterns, gentle or beyond gentle. Seeing my grandchildren. I can go on and on. The list is enormous. And a lot of the stuff I see is really scary because one wants, in the best of times, to influence the world and to bring it into a state that has been envisioned by many great teachers, a state of a place of peace and joy and love and beauty and goodness and kindness and caring about others, all of these things which are taught to us by all the great teachers. And then this extraordinary visibility of the opposite of that. People not caring about others, not looking to the future, being so ignorant of what is ahead that they are creating the very thing that lies ahead, which is moving quicker and quicker toward the end of time. You know, Blanche gets all these health newsletters about what you can do to live longer, eat better, exercise, just a long list of everything. And for people who think of that as valuable, they take it to heart. They do all those things. You know, Blanche goes an extra hour on the treadmill. I used to do that. Now I've cut back to something more moderate. And you know, for a period of time, I couldn't walk because of my spinal surgery, and now I'm up to 2 to 3 miles a day, which is an incredibly wonderful thing and a great deal of appreciation. But I go, you don't need to do more than that. There's a certain amount you need to do in life, and then that's kind of it. But for many people, what this kind of period brings on is, give me more ice cream, give me more fried chicken, give me more whatever, the joys and pleasures of the immediate moment that are all wildly destructive of your body and mind. Give me more alcohol, give me more, whatever it is your choices are. It's like, eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow you die. That is a choice. But unfortunately, we're at a moment where all of the people saying that are contributing to everybody else's lack of longevity. And the world is in a really strange, difficult place. And you don't need a lecture from me, I know that, about any of this. Because in a way, other than maybe eating better, buying an electric car, I don't know what the choices are exactly that you can make, but they're all pretty minuscule in terms of the larger scheme of things. So the question is, what to do in the face of terminality, because one, you are terminal, whether you want to buy that or not. It may be coming at you faster than you think, and so maybe some extra exercise or eating a little better may give you personally a little bit longer time. But when the world itself is terminal, which is beyond comprehension, what can you do? And the answer in both cases is, find yourself, find your center, find this innate stillness and wisdom in you that goes, yes, yes. Why? Because that's all you can do. You can go no, you can fight it, you can look elsewhere, you can watch, you know, the world go crazier in its own way, which it will probably do. You can watch your own mind go crazier if you want. But the real response is this muscular reaction that I talked about earlier, which is let it go, relax, open, surrender, accept, be available to the truth of what is. I don't think there's anything else. I sense from my own personal experience of surrender that something enormous and beyond our understanding as our back. It is there for us. It will usher us through the transitions we have from the fullness of all of this into the whatever remains or comes and follows after all this. Something is there. And the only way I know that is when I sit on my own or I sit with you and I go deep inside this wisdom. The Ching calls it the sage, this knowing voice speaks to me. And it's really interesting. I was talking to Susan, who stayed with us the other night, about this idea I had of buying a house in Costa Rica. Go to Costa Rica. You will have an escape zone from terminality, or at least the world's terminality. And she actually already has a condo there. It's a long story. Sorry, Susan, if I'm throwing too much into the public sphere here. But we talked into the night about having a place to go to, getting away from all of the drama, and made it very interesting. You know, I've been there. I like Costa Rica. It's somewhat pleasant. But what would I do if I went there with Blanche, but my kids were here and you were all here? How would I feel sitting in Costa Rica going, oh, I can go on the beach, it's beautiful, the sun is shining, it's a wonderful day, and everyone else is in catastrophic rainstorms and windstorms and God knows what else up north, or fires, you know, you name it. But I could not accept Costa Rica. I went to bed thinking about it, wanting it. And Susan and I got up the next morning, we're having breakfast. And I think both of us had walked away from Costa Rica. And it was really interesting because I didn't do the work to get rid of Costa Rica. I didn't come down to, this is crazy. It wasn't mindful practice and thought and anything that got me to that. It's just I sat quietly in the morning, and this thing came up and said, no Costa Rica. It basically said, be present with what is. Trust that it's got your back, no matter what's going on, no matter how dark and difficult and painful it gets. And for those of you who've been listening to my talks, the last year has been filled with moments of pain that were beyond anything I've ever known. And the result of pain in these two particular instances has been a more profound opening to life than I have ever known before. I cannot explain why pain does that. I can tell you, you may yell and scream and say, why me, God? But when it passes, there you are. If it passes, then I guess in the end, it all passes. There is a crack in the concrete of your being, and you are open to something greater. Sometimes you just go to bed with tension and concern and fear, and you wake up in the morning and it's gone. Costa Rica evaporated like that. It was gone. And what came in its place was a beautiful day. I really enjoyed my coffee. I felt, I don't know the future, it's unknowable. Life beyond this moment is unknowable. It's unsafe on every level because we're all terminal. And just because we haven't been given that announcement yet by anybody in terms of our own biology, we are kind of being given that announcement a little bit in terms of what's going on in the world. And it's very interesting. As you get old at my age, where personal terminality starts to reflect what's going on around you. That is a very bizarre circumstance. Most people go through their own loss of life with the understanding that life goes on, which is a beautiful thing. It's a good way to go. The idea of going at the same time with the whole of creation is beyond anything that a human being can understand or deal with. And it creates this awful, maybe PTSD misery that psychiatrists and hospitals and people are dealing with all over the world right now, because it's so crazy. It's so crazy. We can't come together to save this amazing space. We're fighting about stupid things. We're fighting about egoistic things. We're fighting about how much money oil companies can make. You know, I don't want to make a speech like this. But what I'm trying to say is, because I don't see a way out personally for the world, or even for myself in the end, I have found, in a sense, a way in. And the way in, which is what we've been taught, what we're practicing here, what Rudy has given us in some ways, and teachers over the course of eons of time, the Lord Christ, we name them, all have, find this kingdom of heaven within. Find it. Because it's more real, more enduring, more powerful, more true than this transformative, always changing, always altering, beauty, ugly, loving, horrific space that we find ourselves in. I do wake up often going, how and what? And then the only answer I come up with, and I guess each one of you will come up with it, I believe, is, well, if you wish, because, and then you find the kingdom of heaven. And you go, I don't know what to say about kingdom of heaven, because in a way we're living in it. In a way it's manifesting through us. In a way it exists because of us. And if we do this thing of go deep inside and we open to our true nature, it shines forth. It is illuminated. It is illuminating. It is full of light, and it is full of uplift and uprising energy. And it will happen every time you sit quietly, let go of the future, let go of the past, sit deeply in the present, and this thing will come in and go back. Don't go to Costa Rica. Just be here. Don't worry. Yes, it's terminal. You are terminal. Yes, it's all terminal. But it has always been thus. I am that is. And I cannot tell you how it knows that or why it says that, but there is this phenomenal quietude of knowing that this thing that inhabits you, that has given birth to you, that is your whole external life on every level, is waiting quietly, sometimes not so quietly, inside to take your hand, take you to its heart, to remother you, to reparent you, to love you and care for you. Am I making this up? Is this a fantasy, an illusion to get me through the day? You can ask yourself that. You're welcome to ask yourself that. But I can only tell you from some kind of not knowing more than knowing that it's true. That's all I can tell you. I don't know if I'm right, but I can tell you when I sit down and I am told no to Costa Rica, when I am told yes, it's terminal, yes, everything ends, yes, there is ugliness as well as beauty, yes, there is everything in manifestation that can be imagined. Yes, this is all real, and yes, I am here, and I've got your back. This is an amazing thing. I think a lot of people come to this through their religious experience. Some people come through it just walking down the street. You don't need a spiritual life to have this. In fact, in some cases, spiritual lives are the antithesis, because one is looking for a special privilege. In all of this, one is looking for, you know, you're having it and they don't, or an elevation of some kind, or a release for you. You know, I don't think it's like that. I don't claim to be the last voice on this. If anything, I'm afraid to talk on some level because I don't have authority, but I do have this knowing, this unknowing knowing that we're all fine. If you put you through some real dark moments, I think, and we will, each one of us individually and collectively will go through these dark moments. But I will tell you, every dark moment, every light moment, every bit of experience in human life will at some juncture be revered as precious. The worst of the worst will still be part of a manifested truth and reality of something beyond us. And how and why, no clue. But does it have our back and does it care? No. I hope you find this answer for yourself and don't have to listen to me to get it, because that's just belief and trust, which is okay. But my sense is got your back. And we're all going to move forward now, I think, more rapidly than we imagine, into very complicated, very stressful, dark period. And you can elaborate on the stress, and you can elaborate on the darkness, and you can elaborate on all the, oh my God, and go to your therapist and, you know, try to find all these different ways to obliterate your fear of it. But the best thing you can do is go arrive at this place deeply quiet in the middle, and just watch us at all, and goes, this too, even this. These are old teachings, these are ancient teachings, you know, the Aso, the Oh Well, the teachings that I talk about now every week, you know, and it come down continually to Christ's teachings, do unto others as you have them do unto you. Buddha's teaching, be kind, be nice. You know, and I guess at this point I'll probably repeat this every week, because I think it's the end of the teaching for me. I don't have anything really else to say. And I've said 1,000 times, I could stop now. Everybody says no, because every time you hear it, it's kind of new. And I go, okay, if they put me in front of this system here, and every one of you, I will say this. And when it gets to be beyond boring, you will not show up. And when I tell you there's a lot of work to do around the house, you won't show up. You know? And those of you who do are like, that's really interesting. There's a commitment here. And I'll tell you, you think in some way the commitment's to you, to yourself, you know, to do this. But I will tell you, you're showing up here, each of you showing up is really doing it maybe for yourself on some level, but you're really doing it for everybody else. You are the very thing that will hold hands, embrace, love, and be there for others when they go through the dark nights of their soul. And everybody will. This is not going to be a gentle time, you know, for anybody. And unfortunately, you know, as I've said 1,000 times, I'm a screenwriter, I was. I told stories about all this kind of stuff, including death, rebirth, all those things. And I know what it's like to see the handwriting on the wall, to see the foreshadowing of the story, to see the, you know, the gun in the first act that kills someone in the third act. There's stuff rising up in our culture, everywhere around us, everywhere. And it seems very directive and very purposeful and very dramatic and very engaging and very terrifying. Yes, that's really, that is real. And it's, we're gonna watch it unfold with some speed. So all I'm telling you, if there was ever a time to follow your conscience into the stillness of your own heart, follow your mind, follow your gut, follow your heart, move inside and let this thing say, it's okay, I got you. And then go through the day. And if you get thrown by it every day, and I tend to, I will admit that, I have these moments of going, oh my God, how can there be that much ignorance? How can there be that much selfishness? How can there be that much egoism? How can there be that much short-sightedness? It's like, I cannot believe it. Well, believe it. It's all around us. It's all around us. And it has always been around us. The world has always been thus. It's the world we live in. It just may be more deeply terminal than it has ever been before. And there may be Deus ex machina, God comes out of nowhere and saves everything. And great. I'm totally for that. But if not, this sitting still, this muscle of surrender, this letting go, this opening, this not giving in to the darkness just because it surrounds you, this clear-eyed awareness of it as being an expression of this kingdom of heaven, it's really important. You cannot change that. All you can do is live quietly, simply, openly, lovingly in that space. But there is a kingdom of heaven inside you. It's been promised by various teachers. It's given different names. But if you are able to stop the outer manifested noise and find the quietude and the stillness to penetrate your own fear zone, you'll be there. It's not that hidden. It's kind of going, hello, hello, I'm here. Come on. It really does do that. And most of us go, too busy. No, this is the time. This is the time. The next, whatever it is, few months, years are going to be tricky and we're terminal. I don't know that terminality will happen to the world in our time, but it seems headed in a certain direction. It will happen to us. And it will be the same response, the same requirement. Find a way to make peace with everything, everything. Familiarity, comfort, the known, the wanted, the pleasurable will all fall away. It's the way it works. It's the way it works for everyone. Nobody escapes that, personally or in the end, globally. So if you find that space inside yourself where you can go, you've done the work. You've done the work. Better that than not. Better that than hiding, running, covering yourself with ignorance. Stay clear. Stay open. Stay in that kingdom of heaven. Find it. Live in it. When I was sitting with Susan and giving up Costa Rica, I was so pleased to be in my kitchen. My sandwich, my morning peanut butter and jelly. It was delicious. Coffee that Blanche made the night before was hot and steamy and wonderful. And it was beautiful. It was just beautiful. And I didn't need Costa Rica. I had everything right there. And we always, always do. So we don't. Have this, trust me, and you have this, and it will appreciate everything because it's amazing. The manifested state of being is amazing, and it's great to have. And the promise is it's even more amazing than you. Okay, hope that's not too dark. A story for you, but it's pressing on me in a big way. I think it's pressing on a lot of people. Yeah, I just needed to talk about it. Good.
I can have an expression of closeness. Of course, I'm looking for you.
Yes. Yeah. No. George just said, if you didn't hear him, no matter where you go, there you are. You know, whether it's Costa Rica or anywhere else in the world. And, Helen Keller said, there's no such thing as safety. So, you know, either you're comforted by your own inner being or you're not. And if you're not, there's work to do. And Rudy said, work over time is the equation. So if you're not doing the work, yeah, then you're going to go toward, you know, drugs and alcohol and fear and noise and food and God knows what else. And if you are doing the work, you will go, I don't need all that. Sit still, just have it. just be it. And not only be it, like I said multiple times, be it for others, because that's the gift. That's really what's wanted for it. Those of you who can be there for others, especially the difficult others, and I know we all have them in our lives. We have a lot of difficult others. But they're your work. That's your job. Be there for them. Any other questions? Looking at this little screen here, nobody here. Okay, that was good. I'll be back next week in California. I'll be back here in 2 weeks, live in person and on screen. Thank you all for coming. David, if I need your recording, I'll let you know sometime tonight or tomorrow, but thank you for doing it. Blanche, thank you for recording.